closely as Larry does.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think if you're already generating the information anyway on a monthly basis to continue to provide it to us.
Yeah, how about put it in the packet monthly, but only give us a presentation quarterly?
Okay, then we'll just stay the course then.
So, do you guys throw up kerosene lamps at home too?
I do have one, but I don't use it.
All right, thank you.
Would that require you much more work to put it in the packet monthly than otherwise?
No, I wouldn't say so, because we go ahead and assemble it anyway for internal use, and so putting it in the packet, just, it's another, maybe we should have Courtney weigh in on whether.
Yeah, Courtney's in.
It's fine by me.
She'd like to have a skinnier packet. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll stand up, because I need to stand up.
All right. Brianna she can correct me as I go along. I'll go ahead and do the update. You stay right back there.
Ladies and gentlemen, I apologize for, this is essentially an update and a ratification, and typically from a sequence standpoint, and I know this is the preference for City Council in terms of boards and commissions, for actions and recommendations to come before a board or commission before it goes to City Council. But at last night's City Council meeting, we had a Water and Power had an item to update the schedule of fees and charges, rates, fees and charges for small cell wireless pole attachments. And the reason that it went to council first is because we needed to have it acted on right now, and I'll explain that in just a second. We needed the action from council now and not subsequent to this meeting. Currently in the schedule of rates, charges, and fees, we have a wired pole attachment. $16.60, is that correct? $16.60.
Yes.
This is for, I'll say it, old-fashioned cable, okay, that was strung from pole to pole, typically power poles, but any other poles within the city. It was $16.60. Not a terribly burdensome issue for a pole, small attachment. If you drive down the street, try not to hit somebody else, but if you look up, you'll see the three phases and the neutral for power, and then you'll see other wires. That's what we're talking about, wired pole attachments. Recently, and I don't know the date on the FCC, I know it's just been very, very recently.
September.
It was September. The federal government issued a new policies that essentially, this was stated last night, Councilor, that essentially abrogated a lot of the municipalities' options when it comes to approving small cell wireless pole attachments. This is a whole new dimension of a pole attachment. No longer is it a single wire from pole to pole. It's actually going to be a fairly complex system that will include, it will have to include power. It's going to have to include being tied in probably to, hopefully, into our municipal fiber system. And then it's going to have the actual antenna on the pole itself. So there's going to be far more evaluation and analysis of these small cell wireless pole attachments. We're going to have to look at them not just from an aesthetic standpoint, but also from a structural standpoint, and so on. The shot clock that was imposed on municipalities by the FCC regulations is a very short shot clock. I think it was Dean Smith whose four-corner offense forced the modern shot clock in the NC2As. This is the equivalent of forcing that same shot. Was it not Dean Smith?
Was.
Thank you. Oh, got that one right. Dean Smith and the four corners went away. So now we have a shot clock. Same thing here. So we are currently, the city is currently in negotiations, discussions with a small cell wireless provider. If we did not do this, take this action last night, bring it before council last night, it may have been the case that we had no fee whatsoever to present to them, which could have been very problematic. We could have waited until January when we do our normal increase for rates, fees, and charges, but we were advised by our legal staff that going from, hey, you've been charging us zero for the last 10 months, and all of a sudden you're going to go to X, could be very problematic, not for us, but for other communities in the state. So it was really imperative from a time standpoint that we Water and Power, requested this action last night from City Council, and it was approved. But I wanted to bring that back before this body and advise you of what the action was that was taken, and the new price cost, the new charge rate was one that was specified in the FCC guidance. We did not put it through a cost of service study. We used guidance figures that were provided by FCC. I believe it's $500 for the review of $500 per review of the pole attachment, and then a fee of $270. So that was considered equitable and fair by the FCC, and so that's what we went with.
Is that a one-time fee, not a monthly fee?
No, that's ongoing. That's monthly.
Annual.
Yearly, sorry,
it's
annual.
Yearly. Okay, because essentially they're renting space on your asset.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And on the future, we may end up going to look at a cost of service, but right now we wanted to get our foot in the door with these two rather than $16.60 per pole. So that's what happened last night. It was unanimously approved last night. So we've got that, and on a go forward basis, that too may change.
Realize this is first reading last night.
Right.
We got to go through second reading.
Second reading, right. Which will be on the 5th. Thank you. Don't have the calendar in front of me. 5th. And like I said, it was imperative because we are currently in discussions with a wireless small cell provider. Sure.
With what was approved last night, was it just the fee structure, or was it a policy that says how they can access it, how they have to maintain it, those
no,
kind of things?
Just the fees, just rates, fees, and charges, just
are,
that dollar
are you
amount.
Working on a policy for
yes.
that will be ratified?
Indeed. Okay. Yeah, that's a whole different deal that we have to, we're working with planning,
sure.
We're working with building, and with traffic, anybody that's potentially impacted by these structures, so. Yes, sir.
Will customers be positively or negatively impacted by the changes?
Which customers do you?
The customers who use the utilities.
Oh, no. I don't think they'll be impacted from a power standpoint or anything. Personally, I don't know. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of how ubiquitous these things are going to be. There may be a great hue and cry saying, my gosh, you're littering the landscape with all these antennas. I don't know. So, but from an existing utility standpoint, no. That's one of the things that we need the policy to make sure of, is so that it does not impact the performance or the structures that we have.
This is in court, by the way. A number of cities are suing. States are suing.
Yeah, it really hamstrung the cities.
Yeah, it's taken away a right of the cities to control their own destiny, basically.
It basically takes away local control from all communities across the United States. So you are no longer allowed to deny attachments in right-of-way or allow freestanding structures in right-of-way. It's required to allow them. There's also the shot clocks that Joe had mentioned. There are time periods in which you must permit them and do reviews on them. Otherwise, they are granted access to those by, I guess, by default. We're not reviewing them in that time period. So there's a number of different problems with that. Several communities and states have sued. They are all transferring into, I believe, the Ninth Circuit Court. We're hoping that there will be some sort of ruling, but right now they're still reviewing the different aspects. So our outside legal counsel, Ken Feldman, is keeping us apprised of all of the activity that's going on. We're not really sure what's going to happen, but yeah. It went into effect after the first of the year, and there's like this time period between now and April 14th or 15th, I forget which date it is exactly, but when we're in this kind of, it's in effect, but not all the details are in place, and so it's a terrible, terrible law.
It's a
Nobody's
lot,
happy.
It's a lot like what the young lady mentioned earlier about the 811, the new law that went into effect on the first of the year. Not very well thought through, and in this case, maybe it was thought through, but for the wrong reasons.
And it doesn't allow the city to deny for RF radiation reasons. I mean, we can deny if it's a safety reason, if you know there's going to be a pole is obstructing car traffic or something, but you can't deny for a variety of different reasons. You have to allow it. Even aesthetics, you can't. I mean, you have some control over aesthetics, but you still have to allow it.
What's the location of the Ninth Circuit?
San Francisco.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Right?
Yeah. And then they had things in the Tenth Circuit, but that got transferred to the Ninth, and there's been some other places too. So they're trying to consolidate because all the arguments are very similar, and they want to have consolidated.
It'll probably go to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals and then to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. I'm trying to visualize how that's going to affect us. Can you give me an example? Who might attach to our pole? Comcast or
no?
No, we're talking about the wire our cell phone provider. So AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint. Those are the big ones, the big four. There are others. There are a lot of companies that are basically infrastructure providers, and then the equipment is actually one of these four carriers. So they provide the structure for the carrier.
Why do they want to do that?
I don't know. It's probably a business model.
So I'll step in. This is actually my technical background. It kind of leads to this. So really, it's about improving coverage in specific areas, and that could be coverage because there's crappy cell service in that area, or there's a high demand. So if they need to pump more data into that area, they're going to supplement it with smaller cell sites. Instead of building these huge towers that take a plot of land, you supplement that with a smaller tower. So in a downtown area, you could think like a traffic control box, something the size of that. You would put one of those that would actually be a cell site, or multiple of those that would be a cell site. Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
Would they be related to the big tower?
So they either use some form of backhaul, whether that's a fiber optic cable that they put in and run back to their network, or they lease that from a service provider like Comcast or City of Loveland. So a small cell, it's pretty small. It's hard to say because the technology is evolving, and the technology will evolve more with 5G, yeah. And that's really what it's geared for, is the higher throughput of the 5G signal versus the 4G, the LTE signals that are out today.
So you can think about, so the macro cells aren't going to go away.
Right.
The macro cells are for kind of that baseline coverage, and then when you need densification or high bandwidth needs, that's when they're putting in these small cells. And so that's what we're seeing across the City of Loveland, where these are being targeted. They're areas where apartment complexes or congregation areas or areas where there's, you know, there's
the
need for that.
Yeah.
You're already seeing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've had several different applications come in for private property, which is fine. It goes through the planning process. We have process in place for that, and we're just starting to have a few applications come in for streetlight replacements.
Did it all require us to take our buried cables out and put poles back up?
I don't think so. No.
No.
Any
other?
Yeah, that was a question.
I'm looking for a pole by my place because the cell service is too.
Oh, well, we'll send them over. Do you have a preference on carrier?
Yeah, AT&T.
AT&T.
Yeah. right beside my door would be fine.
Okay. All right, let's go on to commission and council reports.
Well, it's kind of timely.
I was going to mention that. I read in the paper where it's a real challenge for council people right now, and I'm feeling kind of sorry for you.
Let me say I've had more fun doing other things. we want to get into the graphs. Since we talked about the fees, I want to piggyback on that. We had Congressman Neguse came and visited the city today, and so we had an opportunity to chat with him. And that was one of the items, the pole attachments was one of the items that was brought up. We had sent a letter to our congressmen and senators. A copy of that letter was provided, and we also discussed it with him to convey the what we consider to be an emergency and an intrusion in our government. And it'll be interesting because it's an agency ruling, not a congressional law. When it goes to the Supreme Court, since that, the court has changed, it'll be interesting to see how they rule, because you have constitutionalists there now that are leaning toward the direction that agencies don't make laws. Congress makes laws. And so there's some suspicion that they may whack FCC and say, you overstepped. So we'll see. So a couple other things we talked to them about is water. I go back to a comment that was made. I took a water course, and because I'm not near as smart as you guys, and I grew up where there's water everywhere in Minnesota. And but the comment that was made is, we don't have a water problem, we have a storage problem. And there's a whole host of issues in my mind that go with that. If you have to grab the water, it goes by. And if you don't use it, you lose it. Why not use it? And why conserve? So anyway, with the high cost, the increasing cost of us trying to get that reservoir in place, conveyed to him, we could use some help in trying to remove barriers that hinder us, or place maybe some more restrictive direction on the ability to sue to prevent reservoirs from being built. So he seemed interested in that. Expect he would take it back. Also talked about I-25 and the current governor's decided he wants to take all available funds, the windfall we've had, because it's been a rather robust year for the state of Colorado, and apply that, all that money, to providing full-time kindergarten. So rather than build roads, we're going to do daycare. And so we basically asked them if they could, number one, we need more federal support. Number two, we need incentives created for the state to get on board and partner with the communities, and that the communities have been a willing partner to improve our roads. So he also seemed interested in taking that back. If you're familiar with the snapshot that is sent out, I don't know if you all see that. It's about an 18-page summary of a whole host of things, financial, what's our sales taxes look like? What is that distribution by industry, location of the city? And so there's about 18 pages of pretty good information there that has to do with revenues and expenditures. We met council, some members, representatives of council, three of us, sometimes four, met with representatives of the city and also Citizens Finance Advisory Commission to look at, do we really need all that information? A lot of it has evolved over time. Somebody have an interest in something and they put it in and it just stuck. So we talked to them, and kind of the goal is to basically cut it down and leave it up to them as to what they think council would be most interested in and where they get the biggest source of questions. So if you have seen it, it's going to change. But I think it'll be more compact and more easily readable and more probably meaningful. Do you all has anybody talked to you about the dashboard yet? Do you know anything about it?
The budgeting dashboard?
Yeah. Okay.
Paper.
And Joe left. Where'd Joe go?
Take a phone call.
Put a bell on him. Well, my recommendations. I was a driver behind that, because when I got on council, I got in on April. Well, that's about the time they began giving council stuff. We got a 650-page book that we got a week to review and then ask questions and approve. And it's like, that's crazy. That's insane. And you get, here's how much we spent last year, here's how much we think we're going to spend this year, and here's how much we want for next year. It's like, well, how am I supposed to know? Are they right? Are they close? Are we increasing? Are we decreasing? So I pushed for historical data. And the then budget matter says that's too hard. So Hugh McKean, if you know him, he gave me as a gift 8 years of budget data, and then I had 2 years of my own. And so I put together in 2 week time a dashboard that had all departments, had a summary, had population, workload, ratios, budget data for all departments by division. I put that together in 2 weeks and said, it's not that hard. It's not for rocket science, you can do this. Little pushback. They finally begrudgingly took it. And then in January of last year, they began to work on it. About once a month, I'd get a new spreadsheet, kind of what I had sent them that they had tinkered with. Well, they wouldn't tell me what they changed. They just said, here it is. So I'd go through it, and I'd find pages of errors. Nonsense. After about 9 months of fighting, and we were monthly meetings with the city manager and the budget director, or finance director, the staff had a coup and said, he's not allowed to work on it anymore. We keep fixing it. He keeps breaking it. We'll take it over. And in a week, they're done. All the things that the holes I couldn't fill. And they're, I would say what I gave them is 90% complete, but there are significant holes that you couldn't. My goal was you take the entire distribution of funds and you sum it up, and that's what the budget is. And I couldn't do it because there was some sort of stuff in there. So then I met with them, and there were some enhancements they agreed to do, and 2 weeks later they had those done. And we got a great budget document that has 10 years historical data by department, by division, with workload, by fund. It's a nice tool. For you, I think it'd be at least worth looking at, because you can kind of see in the nice picture the public works by department, and you can see and you've got graphs, nice graphs with it, and what's the revenue, what's the expenditures, by division. And so I think it'd be worthwhile asking, what's her name?
Teresa?
Joyce Johnson,
Joyce Robinson.
Finance.
Joyce Robinson.
I'm sorry. Joyce Robinson, who is the financial, she's accounting. For her to give you a presentation on that. So that's my opinion.
She can
do that probably in a half hour. She does a good job, walks through it, shows you what's there. Anybody can download it from the web. You can play with it. Since it's downloaded, if you make any changes, you can add stuff to it. You can do other ratios and so forth. So it could be a good tool for y'all to use. So, and if there's things you say, well, it'd really be nice if, then convey that to me or convey it to Joyce, and I'm sure they can add it in. The other thing we're working on, just as an aside, is one of the things that drove me crazy when I got on council is I'd ask for a number, and it depends what month I got the request is. For instance, population. 4 different population numbers for the city. It's like, what's the right number? And that happened in a lot of other areas too.
Were they close though?
Not necessarily. Well, I mean, define close. 10% off. So, I mean, a budget number, 80,000 in one number and 72,000 in another. So, one of the things I began to push for is a data, not a data dashboard, but a data book. And so that's coming together, so that the things that we use across all the departments, the things that we give out to citizens, we're going to have a single number that is the number, so we're consistent in all our, I mean, meeting with Congressman DeGoose, that's thrown out, yeah, we have a population of 80,000 people. Well, depends which number you want. I mean, so. And then you probably got involved. And another thing I push for is how do you determine the success of a department, or the efficiency, the effectiveness, what, pick a term that you want, but how do we know as council that the departments are doing well, that it's reasonable? Part of it is goes back to the workload within the dashboard, but it's the workload that's been in the budget has been just a joke. It's not real workload performance type measures. So Leah Bowder has been working with the departments to come up with measures of effectiveness, key performance indicators, by division, by departments, and then we're taking those and we're putting them into the budget, and we're putting it into probably some kind of data book as well, so that we can be able to look at, we and the citizens can be able to look at the trends, or, maybe kilowatt hours or number of, gallons of water used or whatever. Something that you can get a feel for as this population grows, are we kind of growing in the important areas the way we should? So I think that will be useful as well. And then Joe spoils me because he goes through and he picks out all the stuff that, so I don't have, Courtney does. Thank you. Picked out all this stuff? Thank you very much.
Actually, Kathy does that for us.
All right, well, whoever does. I'm going to get lazy because they do some work for me, and I appreciate that. So you probably heard that there was a water break on Wilson.
Yeah.
Well, now we're going to pay for it. So we went ahead and authorized an appropriation to pay for phase two of the replacement of the water line. So I'm sure everybody's really overjoyed about that. There's an amendment, fourth amendment to the fifth interim agreement. Say that real fast. To the Municipal Subdistrict Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District, Windy Gap. So, it says Windy Gap.
Windy Gap for me.
Oh.
Also,
is there a Windy Gap?
There is.
Okay.
Yeah, there
is.
Is
that separate from the Windy Gap for me project?
It is.
Well, there you go.
See,
you learned something today.
That's what
I'm going to have to put that up.
Where we pump the water from Fraser. Across the Fraser River.
I have to take a tour and see these places. Can you arrange this?
Write that down.
I will.
Thank you.
And then there's a resolution authorizing the contract with Northern Colorado Conservancy District. We probably already know this, for 12 acre feet of Big Thompson CBT water?
Just CBT.
She could put in the project. No, yeah. I have no idea what 12 acre feet of water is.
1 acre foot is 325,850 gallons. It's about a football field with a foot.
Okay.
1 foot. Nominally, that's okay. About what it is.
Not enough water for two single family.
About two single family homes a year.
Yeah. It's a half a hectare.
I'm just out of my element here. I'm a bean counter. Okay, and then on February 19th, we talked about the pole attachments, and then we approved the transfer, the interagency agreement to transfer the fiber from Platte River down to Lovell. So those are the highlights. Anything else you think I missed? Courtney, did I miss anything?
No, but I did want to point something out to you really quick, and this hasn't been updated because I'm still waiting on one bit of information before I update this report, but you were talking about switch computers here. The dashboard. We do have a dashboard. I'm not exactly sure what parameters you were looking at to be included in what you were thinking, but here's our Loveland Water and Power dashboard. Like I said, I'm waiting on So it's a couple of pages that shows, we've got it split up into kind of growth indicators and our production, and then our reliability and our financials.
Yours is far prettier than the one I developed.
Well, thank you.
That they improved on. But, I mean, I love charts and graphs. Some of what's there might be something you'd want to incorporate into the budget dashboard. it's certainly not intended to replace a department's dashboard or what they're using, but to provide a big, broad picture to council, boards and commissions, and citizens.
Well, we appreciate all the work you do. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's fun.
Before we go to commission reports, we have a person here, David Crowder, who represents the McWinney organization, and wanted to give us a little talk here. Did you want to say something?
I'm sorry, I'm late. I didn't mean to interrupt your meeting at all. Joe was nice enough to come out and save me out of the parking lot because the front door locked at 5. You know, when you're late, you're late.
That's a real tight window here today.
So, if you don't mind,
I know you want to talk about CBT water. Is that
sure,
right?
And I'm sure you guys are already past that, right?
Yeah, we've passed it, but passed we can go back and discuss
and
it.
And you already acted on it, and you know all that, right? So, I just wanted to say, I know that we've seen the cost of water obviously increase dramatically. We play a little bit in that game ourselves and buying water and selling water, but clearly you have to make these choices, and we really respect that. Work that you guys do. At the same time, the cost of housing is just continuing to just skyrocket, and we're actually at that moment of inflection in the market where we're seeing housing being overpriced relative to people's incomes. And so it's going to be more and more important for us to be focused on how to bring those costs under control so we can provide attainable housing for folks. And we see that not just affordable housing, quotes around it, the big A and all that, but I mean attainable housing for everyone. And so I just, I really want to just add my voice to probably others to say, hey, anything we can do as an industry, any programs we can begin to enact, to conserve water, to begin to bring that ratio down. We just heard the ratio of 2-1. Maybe that should be 4-1, and we need to find ways to get there so that these costs can be borne by the development community and ultimately the consumers more easily. As we continue to do that. And I know you guys are working on firming projects and all kinds of other things to help with long-term water supply, but it is kind of scary to see those graphs that you guys have in your packet. They're just out of control. And we do need to figure out how to do that. And we would welcome any dialogue or even pilot programs aimed at water conservation and bringing those costs back down on a per unit basis.
We're under the assumption about 13% of the cost of a home is tied to water. Is that what you've experienced?
13%. I haven't done that calculation, but
it's actually worse than that, by about double. I just tried to build a house in LaSalle, and the way they get around the water cost is they want 1.5 acre foot for a single family tap. And so if you go out and try to buy that native water, it's going to cost you guys are low. It'll cost you about $45,000. The cost of that house, LaSalle would have billed me $62,000 for a single family tap from water.
This is Jeff Crowder. He's a water guy.
So, Little Thompson.
Another Crowder?
No, Couch.
Couch.
So, Little Thompson, close enough.
You're Crowder.
Yes. Little Thompson Water District is 1.5 times, and that's how they make up for that cost. And so, you're about $52,000 for water tap, Little Thompson Water District. So, my understanding is, too, that you can't convert many more shares of Big T water to residential use, that you've used about all the residential use in the Big T system that you can get. So where are you going to get it? And I've tried to get native water from ditch companies. I need 100 acre foot of water, and I can't find it. So that thing is going to continue to just skyrocket. And I think you're low. I think you'll be at $50,000 in the next year. So for what it's worth. So it's a real problem. I was on the low-income housing task force when Kathy was mayor back in 1997, 98, and it got to be a bitch session for the developers against the town, and it didn't accomplish anything, but basically it was a problem back then. That's 20 some years ago, and it hasn't. There's no better solutions now than there were 20 years ago. So it's a real thing. I'm on the Nebraska housing task force because small towns really suffer in Nebraska. You can't find water, you can't build them, because there's generational houses that are $60,000 to $100,000, and the cost for a new house is $175,000, and a lot of that's water. So it's about 25% is what the house of water, what that is now.
Yeah, 13% would be about $30,000, so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks, Jeff.
I have a question for Mr. Crowder.
Sure.
But from the developer standpoint,
what do you see you could sell to customers out there that doesn't require the amount of water that we now have? I mean, you have to supply product that people want. I'm assuming they want something that looks like an English garden if they can afford it, and that means water.
Well, we do as much as we can, but perhaps there's more that can be done. You know, we have seen a change. The typical 5,000 square foot lot or 50 foot wide lot in a subdivision is occupied by more and more house. It seems like every day, so there's less outdoor areas to irrigate and that kind of stuff. The fixtures that are inside are far more efficient than they've ever been. I think we all know that. So I think new housing is probably doing its part on one hand. On the other hand, you know, as we are looking at landscape plans, et cetera, whether that be for public areas or even with the homes, regulating, you know, what people do with those areas and the types of plants that they have. I know this gets into like a whole other discussion, but if that's where we're at, and I think if, when we see a curve like this with the water spiking like this, I think we have to take a moment and say, look, you know, how are we setting our rates for this? You know, should some of this be built into another way to structure the rates? Because if this is getting out of control, nobody's going to be able to afford a house. So do we build this into a tiered rate system where people who are abusing the system are actually paying for these waters? I mean, there's a lot of different ways to cut up this thing. I never in Colorado introduced myself as a former Californian, but I'm going to do that right now. That ratio in California 20 years ago was 1-4, not 1-2. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. It's very arid, we have very little water. Of course, we steal all of your water from Colorado. Right?
Yes.
That's the perspective. Now that I'm over here, I can say it differently. But point is that there are a lot of things that can be done. There are other agencies to look at that have dealt with these kinds of issues and these skyrocketing prices. And it's probably a little bit of everything. I think from our perspective, if we need to get even more intense in terms of our design guidelines to ratchet down, you know, the amount of turf area that people are putting in and the types of sprinkler systems, that's where we need to go as an industry, probably, you know, on one end. You know, in a master plan community like Sentara, we can do programs like that, and we'd be happy to participate in some kind of a program. But it really just hit me today. I've been watching the costs go up, and then I watched the graphs today, and I immediately turned to you. Like, this thing is on a ramp, and if we don't tackle it in many different ways, we're probably going to get into another set of problems, which are bigger policy issues about housing and other things that, you know, I just think we need to start thinking about these things. Happy to, you know, provide any other input, and I know I'm taking too much time, so.
Well, don't put all those great trees along crossroads there. Put in cactus.
I kind of like the landscaping in Sentara, so I hate to see you change
it. Yeah, just to that point, though, you know, for instance, you know, the environmental center that's there, Jim Tolstrup does a great job working with us and others trying to get us to use better plant materials and use less water to survive better in our environment. There's so much more that can be done, though. And I know we're dealing with a lot of legacy stuff, a lot of lawns, a lot of things that look pretty. But if you design it right, the low impact, the low water use plant materials can be very attractive and be more like a garden than maybe just turf or grass.
Yeah, thank you
for coming.
Any other comments?
Do you have a car?
And just to add on, the program that coupled with what Northern Colorado is doing for helping HOAs to take the common areas, convert them into that Nathan's been involved in.
Hydrozone program.
Yeah, so we tentatively looked at it. We don't, our HOA is 91 homes. We have about 4,000 square feet each, we actually have six. We have about 24,000 square feet. So we did an analysis on it for payback prior to what Northern Colorado did. And our payback was like going to be 12 or 15 years. Because we went out and got the quotes for converting to the landscape. And we used a guy who I think is really good, and he's actually did my our yard. So, in our particular stance, none of our homeowners were interested in a 15-year payback. Could we afford it? Yeah, we could afford it. And if we were said there was a regulation, we would abide by it. That to do it, and I think we're cut down to about 8 years or 6 years
if we could have got the grant. Our bigger HOAs with big common areas that water the dickens out of things, they ought to be coming to you. I don't consider our common areas square footage all that monstrous, but I know I've got some friends. But they've got dish rights, so they don't care. So it may take some regulation to do it. I can say, still the people who have few homes we have now, I converted to zero escaping with hardly any out of 91. I think there's two of us out of 91. So part of that's an education thing. We need to educate people that this water doesn't grow on trees. And it is going to be expensive. I think in the long-term trend, you're not going to see that change. And people want to move to Colorado. It's a good problem for a developer to have, but it is a problem in another way.
Well, okay. I'm just concerned about the, I mean, he instead of affordable, he's even talking about attainable housing. And that's, to me, that's a huge concern because we've got young people that want to continue to live and work here. We want our young people to continue to live and work here. And if they can't, it's not only afford a house, they can't ever attain a house, and that's a problem. And I know that water's a commodity, but we've set up a system that, with the native waters and the storage fees, that have made that water somewhat prohibitive. Now the CBT's gone up, now they're going to go back, and I don't know, I have not worked in the past, Larry, on how this structure was set up, but if there's a way to pass on those storage fees to everybody in the community so that we can make affordable housing, you know, still, you know, something that can happen for these young people, then we need to start doing it because you can only save so much. So even if we can get four houses out of that 1 acre foot instead of two, that's still not going to do what we need to do. It's the same with the construction materials. You know, prices are just going to keep going up, and we're going to become another Vail or Aspen, and then that's going to affect us economic-wise. Joe, it's almost like we're to this point where I don't know if you get a task force with industry and developers, and it's not to be a bitch session, but let's get creative and figure out how we're going to do this. This is not going to go away. It's just going to keep going up.
These are policy decisions.
Yeah, they're huge decisions.
And that start in, actually, we're kind of the enactor of it, but it starts in the policy first,
yeah.
And then planning and building,
right.
And then down to what the water requirements are there. So, I mean, this is it's an immense task, and if it's something that the city council chooses to give us direction, obviously that's the policy. But,
right.
I mean, that's going to involve an awful lot, in our case, possibly tiered rates, restructuring, as you mentioned, the storage fee, but also looking in terms of what is allowed and not allowed for building,
yeah.
For planning and building.
And it is policy level that has to push it down. Because at first, everybody's going out to Johnstown, they're going out to Milliken, everybody started going east, right? Well, now you can't go east anymore because they're catching up, and it's... I just don't know what the answer is, but it is it's an important policy that needs to be addressed, or we're going to start noticing change economically.
Mr. Olson pointed out there is Minnesota.
We've been trucking down.
Yeah, a pipeline. I want a pipeline from Minnesota. You think we can get that through? Yeah.
We're one of the few towns probably on the Front Range that also doesn't have tiered water rates. To create an incentive to use less water,
right.
And which has been said to me for quite a while.
Yeah. Larry, I'll share what was told me by a person who used to be head of this department, that we have a certain amount of water that we build our raised basement in. If we conserve water, then we're not utilizing the water and it passes through. So we have to raise rates in order to pay for the water that we have a claim to. So that goes back to the storage problem. If we can't store it, it flows through. And we grab it when we can grab it, and we might as well use it. So I think the key is we got to store this stuff so we can use it appropriately. Then you can create incentive programs to conserve water because you can hang on to that water.
I don't know.
I'll wait for directions.
Sorry.
That might be a short-term answer to a long-term problem. I'm not in 100, but I've heard that also, and I would not. I haven't seen it on your dashboard yet to how it proves itself out.
Well, Minnesota doesn't have a water problem. Well, yeah, they do too. They got too much.
I want the pipeline.
I came from Nebraska.
Forget Thornton. We're bringing it over from
Minnesota. They're starting to have water problems also, and Nebraska gets a lot more rain. And they have the the real key that we all forget is God hasn't made any more water, really, and I don't think that's concerning God's plan.
I don't know. I'm not going to speak for God.
All right.
Okay.
Great,
all right.
Thanks.
Let's vote to commission reports. Larry, you want to start?
Nothing.
Okay, Gene.
One of the graphs here was, or two of the graphs are very interesting. One is a drought graph that shows that we have extreme drought across most of the state. And if you turn the page, it says we have 108% average snowpack in this area. And so it's kind of an interesting comparison of graphs.
I can't explain the
difference. Kind of explain that. The drought graph takes into consideration soil moisture content. And you've had a severe drought for a long time. You got a very dry soil column that needs to be refilled. So when you're accounting for soil moisture that's available, it's going to take a lot of moisture to fill that up. And that's the deficit you're seeing on the drought graph. Now we are getting more snow than we did last year for the same time thus far. So as the spring comes, it starts to melt off, it's got to fill that soil moisture up first before you start getting runoff in a lot of places.
They had a tough time. They didn't have a winter last year, basically. They didn't have a winter.
Yeah, the San Juans were very dry last year.
I think the other thing is, if you say what Brad Udall says, the concept we went on there are probably somewhat out of date due to that dreaded word climate change, but earlier snow runoff, agreeing with Steve, though we can't catch it. We can't catch enough. But we're getting an earlier runoff, and then we're getting transpiration rates that are much higher with all the plants up there. So that again, we're getting more like comparing apples to oranges as opposed to apples to apples. They won't get into the data.
Well, it was an interesting comparison.
It's very illogical, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm surprised that question didn't come up earlier. I was thinking somebody's going to see these and ask,
say, "Wait a minute,
what's going on here?" But
I've
even heard it explained on public radio the last few weeks that there's just such a deficit in the soil moisture that needs to be replenished before we start to see the runoff levels that we did after 2013 flood. Several days in a row, we had saturated rains.
Thanks. That's all. Randy?
Don't have anything.
Two things.
Okay.
Number one, had a wonderful time down at Colorado Water Conference. Thank you for sending me down there. One of the most impressive things that I saw while I was down there was I attended the climate change seminar that was down there. I learned a lot about what's going on, more than I knew going into this thing. And it was an amazing thing to see and learn that much that way. Number two, are we putting new light poles anywhere?
There is a ongoing replacement program, but yes, we are, but I don't know where exactly.
I think I got a new one close up on my street up there, but that I don't remember ever being there before.
They replaced one in my neighborhood about 6 months ago, and it's a new LED lamp, right?
Okay. So this is just something that, and this is in one of the older sections of town that I'll have a little post out front that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I learned about when I got here and was just absolutely floored about. Yeah.
Free light.
Yep.
Yeah.
Never heard of that.
Nice.
That's all.
I noticed you need another pole out by the solar plant. Someone ran over one.
It's too dark, I guess.
I had a good time at the Colorado Water Congress Convention, spending 2 days there. It was really interesting. I'd love to learn more about the Colorado Water Plan and how the state is going to try to move that forward and what that really means for us as water users. And then the other thing I found super interesting from that was how the forest, it has such a relationship to watershed and our actual water storage with all the fires and the overforesting. So it'd be really interesting to see if the legislative body would like to take that up and actually tackle that problem, not only the insurance and the property perspective, but the water perspective and how much water we're losing by not having proper forests. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's because we don't rake them enough.
Yeah, rake those pine needles up. Yeah.
I'm gonna play my little violin. So, just from Level and Ready Mix, we're trying to get a new gravel permit, new gravel pit permitted in the La Porte area off of the Poudre River. And two things that I've learned is, one, we've already been approached by two entities to purchase the water storage, and we haven't even dug a shovel full of gravel out of the ground. So we will have the water storage sold before we even start mining.
Wow.
So that's how, I mean, that's just the dynamics that's going on. And then number two, if you've read the Coloradoan, we've already been sued. So it seems to be the norm these days that you can go through the permitting process, you can play by all the rules, but if the neighbors don't like the answer, they just sue you. So I am afraid that's going to start happening to the city on certain things. So I guess I'm just concerned about the state of being, but that's the way it is. So
you're very cautious.
Yeah, yeah.
And we have excellent counsel. Yeah. So we look at them probably too frequently. They are very, very busy, all of them.
Yeah.
Was that in reference to the Thornton pipeline thing primarily, or something else? Another one?
It was another one, no, just a gravel pit, yeah.
NIMBY,
yeah.
Okay, director's report.
Okay, a couple of things. First, before I forget, I don't want to forget this because it is going to be pretty good. Next week at the study session on the 26th, the City Council study session, there will be a presentation by Brad Wind and Kyle Whitaker from Northern Water. Brad Wind is the GM there at Northern, and it's going to be on the stat on sort of a Colorado River update. I've seen the PowerPoint slides. It should probably be a pretty good presentation, and I would urge you to either watch online or to attend the council meeting. It should be pretty good. And then save the date April 9th for the Spring Water Users Meeting for Northern Water. A couple of other things about the utility. Right now, the wastewater treatment plant expansion project is at 76% of total completion, and still just slightly under budget, but on time and slightly under budget, so it's going very, very well down there. And finally, we are back on the Big T. CDOT is done, and we were back as of
Monday.
Last Monday?
Week
ago Monday, we were back on the Big T. And so we are taking our 2.2 MGD of native water rights off the Big Thompson every day. We will present a bill to CDOT for the water that we did not get to use through the winter. So, and a couple of other things. I come from California. I worked in California for quite a bit of time. I come from Japan, actually, so I can't even claim, you know, native status. The land of tiered rates. We had five tiered rates there. It is it's a sojourn. And one of the things I would point out, though, that if you believe in the laws of economics, our rate increases over the past several years, for very good reason, to replace degraded infrastructure and have resulted in a drop in consumption. So you raise the price of something, depending on the elasticity of that commodity, the consumption will go down, and we have had decreases. Now, that's not to say that on a go-forward basis, that as a policy, we could not go to tiered rates. Interestingly, the utility that I work for in California, the first tier was essentially Lifeline and Interior. The second tier was external at 80% of ET, or evapotranspiration. And then they started adding on the third, fourth, and fifth tiers, double, double, and double. And all of those monies that came from the third, fourth, and fifth tiers, since they weren't a cost of service, you know, we could deliver the water pretty much for the same cost that we were charging for those first two tiers, those all went into water supply projects. All of those dollars went to water supply projects. But interestingly enough, that was a budgeted tiered rates
that each individual customer received an individual budget based on the number of people in their house and the size of their landscaping. It was a 2.5-year project, and I'm not sure it ever had the payback on it, but tiered rates are possible if the policy is given that direction. So anyway, I do think that we are making progress in that respect in terms of at least reduced water consumption, but obviously tiered rates are a policy decision. And finally, Larry had sent an email in looking at some water loss data, and I just wanted to kind of touch on that for a second. I think I've been here almost 2 years now, and looking back over some history, I think we've made tremendous advances in both the physicality of reducing our water loss, as well as accounting for it, and much of that is thanks to Michelle, and looking at through the eyes of rather the conventional past, which was you've got an 8% or a 10% or a 15% water loss rate. You really have to look to different metrics, which are presented in this M36, and I think we're doing that now. We've made many advances in terms of how we bill internally and externally. We now bill for stormwater facilities, we bill for parks, we bill for wastewater treatment plants. Much of the quote-unquote unaccounted for water is not really water lost, but it is accounting, and that is something I think we're really zeroing in on. Now, that being said, is there more work to do? Absolutely. You see the evidence of that up on Wilson Avenue right now. That pipeline was in the worst condition of any pipe I've ever seen in my life. It was horrible. That short project from 34 up to 22nd Street with a couple of branches out, that's $1.5 million. I could take 15 or 20 million right now and apply it across the city and reduce water unaccounted for water, lost water in that case. But I don't have that money. It's much like the CBT versus the Chimney Hollow conundrum. Where do I put the money? Right now, that is probably the last pot I'm going to get is Chimney Hollow. I've got to husband my resources for that. I'd love to go out and buy more CBT water. I'd love to go out and fix every pipe in the city, but I am constrained by rates and I'm constrained by our operating budget, and I have to balance both of those. But I am extraordinarily proud of the work that our engineering team has done, our operations team continues to do to getting to those leaks as rapidly as possible. I was out with them Saturday afternoon on Taft Avenue. We had a nasty little leak down there, and they were trying to get that wrapped up before the real cold weather came in. They do an outstanding job, and thanks also to Michelle, who does an outstanding job on an extraordinarily complicated water audit program. So that concludes my remarks.
Well, Joe, awesome. At least you're not $22 trillion in debt.
And that is thanks to Jim Lees and his people that we have a very, very healthy budget, very healthy.
We can appreciate that.
Yes.
Okay, anything else?
Anything good for the cause here?
All right.